Love Sport Radio. On digital radio, online, mobile, and smart speaker. Fast-paced delivery that's sure to knock you for six with former England opening batsman. This is Nick Compton's Cricket World Cup Show on Love Sport.
England got off to a cracking start against South Africa yesterday, beating the Proteas by 104 runs. What a start that was. And Ben Stokes, my word, what a star of the show he was, scoring 89 runs, taking two wickets, and of course, clinging on to one of the most sensational catches I think we've ever seen. Captain Owen Morgan had this to say about the all-rounder.
We see a lot of them in training do stuff like that all the time, and you just shake your head at it because it doesn't happen every day. His all-round game was on, and that's great for us at the start of a tournament. It shows that he's right on top of his game.
He was also pleased with the overall batting performance.
Delighted to be off and running in the tournament. I think when you put in a performance like that on top of it, it's more satisfying than normal. I thought we were very good today. I thought the maturity and smart cricket that we played, I thought shows probably our improvement in the last 2 years.
Yeah, good to hear the endorsement from the captain, Owen Morgan. He's been in great form too. But of course, for me, it was Jofra Archer in scintillating form. I mean, what a find this guy is. Even managing to rattle the helmet of the great but ageing South African opening batsman Hashim Amla, he was delighted with how things went.
When they got announced about the second over, like, everyone just exploded, and it was just a great feeling.
And the old enemy, Australia, well, they take on Afghanistan in their opening game of the tournament tomorrow. Sounds like a pretty easy start to the tournament, but coach Justin Langer has urged fans not to give ball tampering culprits Steve Smith and David Warner too much stick when they get onto the pitch.
They're human beings, that's the truth, and that's what I find hardest. You feel for them personally, and they're going to have thick skin. We talk about earning respect. I think it's really important that people show some respect as well, because they are humans, they're really good cricketers. You know, they made a mistake, they paid the price for it.
Well, we'll certainly be talking about that later in the show. I think we can have a little bit of fun with that, and certainly the Barmy Army will. But there really is only one place to start today after a few nervous moments when Johnny Bairstow, who's been in great form too, was dismissed second ball of the game. England managed to turn on the style and beat South Africa very convincingly. 104 runs. It was described by Mike Atherton as a rather workmanlike performance to get to 311. But I'm joined in the studio by Patrick, who is filling in for Guy Watts, who's away in Madrid reporting on the Champions League final. Lucky guy. Patrick, great to have you.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm a bit jealous of him, but, you know, he's not sat opposite Nick Compton, is he? So there we are, mate.
Oh,
absolutely.
Mate.
What a catch. Ben Stokes. Catch of the century?
Well, look, it's up there. I mean, it was interesting. I mean, Ben did put a slant on it, saying I was in the wrong position.
Yeah.
If I was in the right position, it would have been straight down my throat. But, I mean, look, how many of us... look, I've been in the wrong position how many times, and that ball goes sailing over your head, and you sort of think, oh, just do my ankle, just stay on the floor, because if I get up and turn around, and you have to go and pick the ball up while the crowd are absolutely calling you every name under the sun. But, I mean, only a man like that can do something. What a freak.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that is the best way to describe him. He is a freak. They've done a little bit of a breakdown on this. So Ben Stokes, right, had 2.55 seconds to react from the moment the ball hit the bat until it hit his hand. He was 8 foot 8 inches off the ground when he took the catch, and the ball was travelling at 65.8 miles an hour. It's not a bad grab, Nick.
I mean, just hearing him say it was a fluke, to be honest, I was in the wrong position. I mean, you know, I wouldn't mind being in the wrong position that many times. That feeling for about 5 seconds when I was facing the crowd and everyone was cheering, it was phenomenal. I think, you know, I suppose we talk about the legacy and this World Cup in perhaps a bit more perspective. You know, obviously England have got off to a good start. I really want to get into that. But I suppose looking back, it's about some of the individuals, isn't it? And some of the players that England have in this team.
Yeah, just absolutely. And it's about those kind of, that sprinkling of stardust, isn't it? You've got a great team unit there. They're really well drilled. They're really well organised. But actually, it's that little bit of extra quality. Jofra Archer has it in abundance, as does Ben Stokes. And that is what wins you tournaments. When it gets to what Sir Alex Ferguson used to call squeaky bum time towards the end of the season, when it's all getting back to the wall, you need those little bits of magic, don't you? But I saw Phil Tufnell came out and said, oh yeah, you know, back in my day, we just used to turn up and play. I mean, it's very, very different now, isn't it? But how much has fielding become such a bigger part of the game, Nick, do you reckon, in the last, what, 5 years, 10 years, I suppose?
Yeah, oh, it's been huge. I mean, and for me, that is where England set the bar. That is absolutely where they set the bar. I think that, for me, is what has really turned things around. I think a lot of people focus on batting and bowling. And even when I do some coaching nowadays with young guys who are sort of looking to come into the game, for me, I focus completely on the fitness and fielding because it adds so much to the game. You look at the likes of Roy, I mean, Bairstow, these guys are world-class fielders. I mean, you know, everywhere you go, I mean, Moeen Ali's got great set of hands. You know, you've got Jofra Archer's a complete athlete in the field. I mean, what a physical specimen he is. And, you know, I think from a fielding perspective, you know, people will talk about the Butlers, they'll talk about the Bairstows at the top of the order, etc. But for me, it's the all-round package that England bring. It's the fact that they've got every base covered.
Yeah. I mean, this is it. But I want to know how much detail goes into it. They did a lovely graphic on Sky yesterday when England were in the field. And mid-on and mid-off were exactly 27 metres apart. Then it panned round to cover. They were exactly, I think it was about 15 metres apart. And you could see that it was obviously right down to the most minute detail. Nick, what kind of discussions do you have before a game? And how does it work, really?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of people will think, you know, that's something that would be laid out in practice. And you know what? It really isn't. What actually happens is that over time, when you start to develop patterns, you start to get used to your opening bowlers, for example. You start to get used to your own fielding position. You know, I fielded at backward point. Mm. Now, I did that for 13, 14 years. And so I sort of felt like I became a master of, well, I wouldn't say I was the, you know, sort of in the realms of a Herschel Gibbs or Jonty Rhodes, but I got very used to that position. I knew where I was standing for certain bowlers. I knew where I was standing for certain batsmen. And you've got to understand, these guys play against each other day in, day out. So for David Warner, for example, they know the cut shot's quite an important one. So as a backward point, like almost subconsciously, I would know where I need to be. And these guys, like you talk about the mid-off and mid-on, they know where they need to be for each bowler. They know where they're going to stand. So, I mean, it almost has become a science, you know, and that is when you see like a good team like England. They know exactly what they're trying to do.
Would you rather catch a skyer where you've got loads of time to think about it or just have it flashed at you at backward point? Because especially when you've got all that crowd around you and they're giving it to you and that goes up in the air, is that kind of heart-in-mouth job or not?
Well, look, you'd like to, any catch you take is one I would like to take. Yeah. I mean, I've dropped both and I've caught both. And I think the freak catch, the one where you dive to your left and it just suddenly sticks in your palm and you look up almost more surprised than the crowd is a great feeling. But again, I quite enjoyed sort of circumnavigating the boundary, those big high catches, staying cool under pressure. Those can be very, very difficult too. And, you know, you don't want to think too long. You know, you start thinking about, oh dear, you know, if I drop this, you know, what's this going to do? And those things do go through your mind.
Absolutely. Well, look, we're going to be starting to talk about Jofra Archer in a minute. But just quickly, Nick, your take on his performance yesterday.
Well, he was the difference. He is the difference. Jofra Archer, what a player, what a find. And what a man for the occasion. You know, I mean, I know they've been talking about him, bigging him up for some time. But, you know, let's be honest. You know, he's played some cricket for Sussex. He's played in the Big Bash. He's played in the IPL. He's had, you know, tournament experience against international players, but to come into a World Cup for England, having had very little experience, and to go and perform the way he did. I mean, you know, touch wood, he's fit throughout this tournament. And if he is, I mean, England have it in the abundance. They've got everything.
Yeah, he's not bad with the bat either. A back foot cover drive off his first ball as well.
This is Love Sport.
This is Nick Compton on Love Sport Radio, reflecting on what was a fantastic start from England's cricketers yesterday against South Africa, beating them by 104 runs. Just talking about Ben Stokes and what an unbelievable catch that was. And of course, the form of Jofra Archer. But I'm delighted to say we're joined by Simon Hughes, who's on the line. Simon, good morning.
Morning.
Yoza, just wanted to ask
you...
Yeah,
morning. Morning, Compo.
How good is this English team?
Best one-day team I've ever seen from England, undoubtedly. And I think Archer, I think you were just talking about Archer then, weren't you?
Yes.
Archer adds that sort of extra ingredient they didn't really have before, I think. So that even a team like the West Indies now, with their powerful batting... Sorry, I'm in a hospital, actually, so I'm trying to hear a lot of bleeping going on.
As long as the bleeping doesn't stop, we're all right.
The pace of Archer will just, I think, make the other teams quite apprehensive of England. And that's the one ingredient they haven't had. I mean, obviously their batting has been intimidating, but now their bowling is as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I suppose a lot has been said about England, but you know, looking further afield at their competition, give us an idea of who you see as a main threat.
Australia and India. Sure. India, clearly, you know, they have that batting power, and they've also got an equivalent, very penetrative, very clever bowler in Bumrah. But I don't think the Indian support seamers are that good. They're okay, but they're not brilliant.
I agree.
And obviously, India's batting is outstanding. But then again, they're still not certain about their lower middle order, whereas England, obviously, with Stokes and Butler, have got probably the best lower middle order or middle order in the competition. And then Australia know how to win, don't they? They know how to win World Cups.
Yeah.
I think they've won three, maybe even four, but certainly three. And, you know, that top four that are probably the envy of every other country. So, with Smith and Warner back. So, you know, they will be, I think the Australia will be the most difficult to beat, actually.
And who's your fourth?
I think India have got flaws.
And your fourth team, if you had to sort of put semi-finalists, would you, I mean, you mentioned the West Indies
there.
Yeah,
it's really difficult, isn't it? I mean, it just depends if West Indies click or not. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think the West Indies, for me, are the team that I sort of have as an outside bet, really. I think a 20-1, if you're a betting man, of course. And you look at some of the young players, you know, and some of the wickets they're going to be playing on. I mean, someone like Gale could have a bit of a swan song, couldn't he?
Yeah. They're playing at Trent Bridge, aren't they? Today, I think, West Indies against
Pakistan.
It's going to be a run fest. I was stood with Mark Wood yesterday, actually, or the day before, bowling to Ben Stokes in the nets. And Stokes was just smashing every ball in all directions. And I said to Woody, basically, being a bowler in a 50-over white ball cricket is like trespassing on a firing range. It's completely foolhardy. I said, you've got to be nuts to be a bowler. And he said, I know, yeah. I know, it's crazy. And he was bowling deliberately short to Stokes in the nets to avoid being hit by the ball being whacked back at him.
Fantastic.
That's what it's like.
Fantastic. Look, I just want to get your take on one thing that slipped under the radar a little bit from yesterday for me. And that was Josh Butler. Look, fantastic cricketer. It's not in doubt. The guy's world class. But his keeping wasn't the best. He's not been in the best form behind the sticks. Dropped a catch yesterday. All right, it didn't cost us in the end. But do you still back him behind the stumps, do you think?
Yeah, I think he's fine. I wouldn't say he's not the most brilliant keeper that has ever played the game, but he's pretty safe. He's agile. Yeah, I think he's fine. I'm in England, I suppose, I have the luxury of thinking about that there so as well. But I mean, Butler at the moment is the guy in charge. He's very good. I don't think you change people just on the basis of one game.
He seems
to have lost his mojo with the gloves at some point. Obviously, they could go to Bairstow, but at the moment, I wouldn't be panicking.
Well, I mean, look, there's obviously so many positives. I mean, if there was one worry for this England team, I guess you're in you get towards the knockout phase and anything can happen, can't it?
I don't have any worries, actually. I don't know. I can't sort of really pick a... And, you know, everybody I talk to, I mean, I spent some time over the last... I've had with Sean Pollock and Graham Smith and, I don't know, Wasi Makram, people like that, you know, great cricketers. And none of them can see a flaw in this England team. They have had the occasional blow-up in critical games in the past. 2 years ago, Champions Trophy semi-final at Cardiff, obviously. But I think they've got better since then and they've got more stability and better, more experience of conditions. And I think they should overcome any obstacle that they have to.
Sure. And just lastly, a little bit about South Africa's game yesterday. Probably a slightly disappointing performance from them.
Yeah, I talked to Sean Pollock about it afterwards, and he did use the word disappointing, but I think they were just outgunned by England. And, you know, I just pick on England scrapped their way to 310, and, you know, I said to Shane Warne, I reckon that's enough with the England bowling and fielding. He said, no, it's only par. But what they're bowling and fielding now makes a 300 score very challenging. And yesterday's fielding, you know, I did a little sequence on telly, actually, of of the different bits of fielding, and it was fantastic in the ring, two sharp slip catches by Root, and then Stokes on the boundary with that run out and that catch. I mean, they looked invincible, and it's obviously a bit early to be calling them as sort of almost champions elect, but that's how it looks.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Brilliant. Look, Simon, thank you so much for your time. Simon Hughes, the cricket analyst. I just want to get your take, Nick, on the speed of Jofra Archer, because obviously he did manage to rattle Amla's grill yesterday. And I know Amla is, you know, he's getting on a little bit. It seems a little bit harsh to say because he is a great of the game. But, you know, is there that key difference there between someone who's bowling at 89 miles an hour and someone who's bowling at 92? You know, is there a massive difference there as a batsman?
There is a massive difference. And while there isn't a massive difference in terms of the miles per hour per se, I think it's very interesting to look at Archer since he's come on, and the likes of Wood, because the two of them have pinned the last three games they've played, they've pinned three batsmen.
Mm.
And, you know, as a batter, you wear the odd delivery here and there, but it has more of a statement that, you know, not only can you not camp on the front foot, as a lot of one-day players do now, but when you've got something like that, which is really pushing those outer extremities, those boundaries, you know, hitting a great player like Amla, you know, it doesn't happen easily. I mean, he wasn't late on it. He was a year late on it. You know, Faf du Plessis, I mean, you know, that was an uncharacteristic shot from the South African captain, you know, caught on the boundary, not in control. I mean, those are fast bowlers' wickets. And I think, you know, in my opinion, that's kind of been lost a little bit over the last few years. You know, the one-day game's become a little bit formulaic in the sense that there's been, you know, bat has rarely dictated ball. But to actually see a fast bowler come in, nipping it around, and actually see a few batsmen jumping around of the quality and calibre of Hashim Amla, I think that was, for me, very exciting.
But Nick, we've got to ask, have you ever been scared facing a fast bowler? You don't look like the type of guy that's particularly flappable, I must say.
I didn't, you know what, I sort of, rightly or wrongly, I never had the chance to face a truly rapid bowler at his pomp. I faced Mitchell Johnson, Brett Lee. They were bowling quick, but they weren't, you know, at the peak of their performance.
This is Love Sport.
Contrasting emotions yesterday, right? So Ben Stokes took that catch and he said, when he hit the ground, I imagine he hit the ground pretty hard, he fell from 8 feet in the air. So hit the ground, he rolled over, realised he'd caught it. Had a look at the crowd and just everyone was just going mental. There was beer everywhere, there were shirts everywhere, hats coming off. And he said it was basically one of the best feelings of his life. But then you have a look as well at Johnny Bairstow. Look, he's in fine form. He's a great cricketer. He seems like a decent lad as well, from what I can tell. You know, snicks off, first ball that he's faced at a World Cup. Just that range of emotions there, from the highs to the lows, Nick.
Well, I know all about that, that's for sure. I think any batsman, any cricketer, I mean, you actually look at statistics, you know, you fail more times than you succeed in cricket. You know, it's not a nice stat to read, but it's something that you probably come accustomed to. And it probably took me a while to get used to that because, you know, as a player of, you know, these internet of Bairstow's class, you know, Stokes's class, you start to have expectations of yourself, you know, and particularly when you're in an England shirt, such is the pressure that you almost feel like you've got to perform every time. And I thought it was quite a good move just from Faf du Plessis. You know, we haven't spoken a lot about leadership styles and captaincy and what have you. And I thought to bring on a spinner, not that it hasn't been done before, but just to bring on a spinner to a guy like Johnny Bairstow and Jason Roy, who love the ball coming on, particularly at a ground like the Oval, where the ball does come on, you get a bit of bounce, you get value for shots. I thought that was quite clever thinking. And, you know, Bairstow has performed well enough of late. He's performed well enough for the last couple of years. This won't affect him. He is an intense character. He does take his cricket very seriously, as they all do, but he does sometimes wear his heart on his sleeve. And that's what I like about Johnny. You get a wholehearted performance. He's a fighter. Let me tell you right now, Johnny Bairstow will be back, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of the leading run scorers in this England team.
I think one thing that's always, as a non-sportsman, which I think won't come as a surprise to everybody, just look at me, I've got a body like a drop lasagna, but there we are. No, but Johnny Bairstow, I've always wondered this, right? How do you go...
He's ginger, though. You've got to feel sorry for him.
Well, look, absolutely, although I've got a little tint of the rouge on at the minute myself as well. But look, I've always wondered this, because what elite level sportsmen do better than, frankly, any other calibre of human being is the way they come back from failure, right? How on earth do you do that? Because I'm the type of guy, I'd be in the pavilion, I'd be in the just sat in the shower, still full batting pads on, just crying myself to sleep. Like, how do you manage to mentally flip that round and just go and do the business?
Well, there's two things I'd like to come to. I mean, not only just on the wider topic, but also about this England team. You know, any other England team, if you look at some of the other England teams that played in World Cups, and you know, England haven't been very successful in World Cups, and there hasn't been a backing of the individuals. You know, in previous times, you know, Johnny Bairstow gets a low score. Suddenly there's, you know, question over his selection. Johnny's going home thinking, oh, am I going to get another game in the World Cup? And, you know, this is the World Cup. This is my moment. This is my chance. You know, I don't want to give it up. And do it. But this team, where Owen Morgan's been different with Trevor Bayliss, is they've backed players. They've backed them, and they've backed them, and they've backed them. And they've said to them, as Kevin Peterson said yesterday, I read on a tweet saying, you've been backed to fail. Go out and perform your stuff. And that's an interesting sort of psychology, really, in the sense that if you're backed to fail, then there's no fear. Because if I know I can go out there and get naught, and Bairstow can get naught, he can get naught next, you know, the next game. He can get naught in the game after. He'll still open the batting. Mm. He will still be encouraged to play the way that he has. One, because he's an exceptional player and he's done it before. But two, this England team has continuity, has confidence in their players. And I think that is the difference between this England team. That is where they've managed to just cross that fence and that hurdle from previous, you know, decades where England one-day teams were full of fear of failure.
Well, that's it. And the idea that you could have this constant kind of sword of Damocles hanging over your head every time you go out to bat, you're not going to get a great performance from someone if they're feeling that way and they're feeling under pressure. And did you ever feel like that? Did you ever feel as though, look, you know, when I go out to bat today, you know, this could be my last game for this team or for, you know, or for your country? And how did that affect you?
Yeah, I mean, I think what, you know, the answer in terms of how to deal with it is to go back to your basics, to your processes. You know, it's a common sort of known thing. But someone like Bairstow, you know, this is why these guys practice. This is why these guys do the work that they do. This is why they spend hours in the nets, you know, working with coaches. That's why they're psychologists in the team. You know, all Johnny will do is he'll wipe that clear. It was first ball. I mean, sometimes when you get out first ball, there isn't time to analyze your innings. You got out first ball. You weren't maybe quite moving your feet. It wasn't your day. I think Johnny's got to that point where I can tell you he wouldn't have been sitting there with his pads on. He walks in. He's someone who deals with things. Pads would have been straight off. He probably would have grabbed the trainer, gone and done a 10-minute burst just to do a bit of a what have you. And basically, that's what he would have done. But, you know, I think for me, it's going back to your basics, go back to your processes, making sure that you just keep repeating the good things.
When you do something particularly well, though, right, and when it's all going brilliantly and you have that absolute high, do you have to kind of manage that as well as you have to manage your lows? You can't let it all go to your head. You walk out strutting your stuff and think you're the best thing in the world.
Yeah, well, I mean, I opened the batting with Alistair Cook, who was probably the greatest exponent of mental balance, you know, opening the batting for England for a number of years and achieved what he's done. There's absolutely no doubt that you have to have that balance. You have to be, you know, have to sort of balance those highs with lows. I mean, he's had many highs, some lows as well, but he was very pragmatic, you know. Mm-hmm. It wasn't my day today. You know, I played a rubbish shot or whatever it is.
Just on the actual total that England posted, 311. Now, obviously, I think four batsmen went on and got 50. They didn't kick on after that. Is that a worry for you, do you think?
No, because I think the conditions dictated that. I think that the only worry is, I mean, Joe Root does it a lot. He gets 50 very often, but doesn't quite maybe go on and get the hundreds. But I can tell you, I would far rather have a guy like Joe Root getting 50, almost chalking him in for 50 every time he bats. You know, I think that solidity at the top of the awning is exactly what England need. And I think they do have players that can score hundreds.
Love Sport.
The West Indies start their campaign against Pakistan, and we're just talking a little bit, Patrick, about some of the other contenders. You know, we've spoken about India. We know a lot about India. Of course, Australia coming back into it. But, you know, these two teams here, Pakistan and West Indies, I wouldn't say unknown, probably not, you know, rarely rated to do a huge amount. But how good are these two teams and can they get there?
Well, Pakistan, if they lose this game, they've equaled their record for most consecutive losses as a one-day international outfit, which is a surprise, actually, because three times against England in that ODI series, they hit 340. So you're like, OK, surely they are actually a decent side, but maybe their bowling is what's letting them down. Pakistan strike me as a team that are just, they're just always dangerous. They're quite unpredictable, I think. You never quite know what you're going to get. You get a few biffers and you get some pace. But, like, it is always going to be a bit tricky with them. But, yeah, the West Indies won the top and chose to field. Who's your money on, Nick?
I like the West Indian team. I love Chris Gayle, the universe boss. I mean, we've seen him do it for years. He has talked about
retiring at the end of this World Cup, which will be a sad day for cricket. But, you know, he's the type of guy that wants to put his mark on a World Cup. I mean, you know, you look at this wicket, I'm just looking at it now, and I'm getting itchy legs, to be honest with you. I fancy myself on that wicket. It looks like an absolute belter. Trent Bridge, you always get value for runs. I always love playing at that ground, by the way. I think it is a beautiful cricket ground. Very small boundaries, especially square. But, you know, I like this West Indies team. I think that they have some incredibly exciting cricketers. I mean, we look at the luck of Andre Russell.
Yeah.
I mean, gee, we always watched him in the IPL. I mean, what form he's been. To have a guy like that coming in, I think from a batting perspective, they probably, you know, resemble England the most out of all the other batting teams.
Mm.
I don't know what you think about that, but I think they've got an exceptionally strong batting
lineup. Yeah, it's explosive, isn't it? It really, really is. I wanted to hear what your take on Chris Gayle is as a bloke, because you must have kind of met him a little bit. I know you spoke about it a bit before, but like, I want to know what he's like kind of between innings and off the pitch. Is he just so chilled out he might as well be in a coma?
Well, we're in the Champions League. I think it was with Somerset, and we played against him. And, you know, I went into the gym a few times, and he had his vest off. And to say I felt intimidated was a slight understatement. I promptly waited for him to finish his bicep curls and bench press, which I think that's all he does. You know, he's got chicken legs, but his upper body is just huge and cut and ripped, and he's a big man, 6'5" of him, but a very nice guy. Very, I mean, you know, you talk about chilled. I mean, I think between the hours of cricket, I think it's probably spent largely horizontal. Not doing a huge amount. I mean, a lot of the West Indies, the guys are super chilled. I mean, it just goes with their nature. You know, they're really great to be around. I mean, look, a lot spoken about Chris Gayle, but one guy that I really do rate, and a little bit about leadership, is Jason Holder. I think he's a very, very impressive guy. I've sort of spoken to him a bit over the last year or so, and for a man of his age, he's still a young guy, but my word, has he got maturity? Has he got leadership skills? And I think a lot has been spoken about the West Indies and their, you know, inconsistency. But a guy like that who has a bit of consistency as a person, as a bloke, I think is one of the reasons why I do rate this West Indian team.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always really depressing for me when I have a look at the ages now of the people that are running out on the pitch, and I realise I've finally tipped that balance where they're all younger than me, which is so annoying now. But absolutely, you've picked on him there, Jason Holder. But I want to get your take a little bit on this Pakistan outfit as well. You know, Imam is obviously still recovering after Jofra Archer wrapped him on the forearm, so we'll be seeing him get underway. But how much of a threat do you reckon they are? Do you think actually they're just too inconsistent to do well at a tournament?
Hard to say. Pakistan, I mean, you know, you sort of got to ask the question, how good are they? You know, I don't think they quite have the bowling attack that they've had in past World Cups. I think they always perform well in these World Cups. I mean, you know, they won the ICC trophy. But it just looks at this team. I think they've got the batting explosion. I think you look at Fakhar Zaman. You know, Imam, you talk about, you know, two of these guys at the top of the order are very, very good players. Mohammad Hafeez is a very experienced campaigner. There's no doubt they've got some good players, but in the past they've had exceptional bowling. I just don't know if their bowling's good enough.
All right, okay. Now look, we spoke a little bit about Ben Stokes earlier on, okay? All-rounder, you know, I just want to get your take on, who do you think the greatest English all-rounder of all time is? Now, I'm just going to throw in that I think there's a few criteria that you need to have for this. And don't just say, you know, batting, bowling, fielding. No, I think what makes a great English all-rounder is if they've got a lot of character about them as well. I want to see you kind of getting on a pedalo and trying to find Ian Botham's boat. All right, I want to see more of that. You know, Ben Stokes has got a bit of that about him. Do you think that is like a little bit of a prerequisite that people have to have if you're going to be kind of a top-level English all-rounder?
Well, let's just, you know what I think we should do? Let's just hear Ben Stokes. We've got a bit of audio about him.
I had a little bit of a panic on, to be honest. I was a little bit further in than I should have been. I took a step in and, yeah, I just panicked a bit. But I guess the nickname, the Claw. So, yeah, look, it stuck.
You look like you surprised yourself there.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, it's sort of like I didn't really know how to react because I knew I shouldn't have been there. And there's probably a regulation catch if I was in the right position.
Yeah, look, you know, just backing him up there. I mean, Ben, I really enjoyed playing with Ben. I mean, firstly and foremost, I remember that 250 he scored in Cape Town, where he sort of burst onto the scene. We knew how good he was. We knew what sort of a player he was. But just talking to him, watching him, you know, I think when he first came into the team, there was kind of this perception that Ben was this, you know, sort of northern
you know, sort of cricketer who sort of, you know, drank a few beers and whacked a few sixes and bowled at sort of 85, 90 mile an hour and, you know, could do it all. But you know what? There's a lot more to Ben. I'll tell you that right now. He's a real professional. I've never seen a guy study his batting, work on his game quite like Ben does. You know, deep down, he's quite a thinker. People, you know, people don't see him like that, you know, because when he's out there, he plays with a smile on his face. He, you know, he's got that Botham-esque kind of feel to him. But actually, he does take his cricket very, very seriously.
I think that's it, isn't it? People kind of write him off. They see the tattoos. They see the fact that he's a big lad and he is Northern as well. And he's a bit of a biffer. And I think people just go, oh, OK, we're just going to pigeonhole you. You know what I mean? And actually, as you rightly said there, there is obviously so much more about him. You don't just become Ben Stokes. You don't just become as good as he is. You have to really work at it, don't you?
Yeah, you do. I mean, Owen Morgan almost stopped him bowling in the next over because he was so shaky. I mean, you know, you do really get up for it. And, you know, I mean, you talk about his catch, but what about that run out Pretorius from the boundary?
Yeah, well, look, absolutely. Also, he's on a hat-trick for the next game. So, because obviously he finished with two wickets back-to-back, so he will be starting on a hat-trick ball on the next game, Ben Stokes.
Let's get the crowd behind that. Absolutely. We've got to get the crowd behind that. Patrick, I wanted to ask you another question, just looking forward, England's next game. What do we have to say about that?
Oh, gosh, you know what? I think... I'm looking at it now and I just can't see England getting beat at the minute. I really, really can't. The way that we're flying at the moment, and it's just the whole package, as we said earlier, Simon Hughes said, this is probably the best England One Day international side that we've seen. It's just the way they're so well organised and I can't really see any weak links. You know, before, sometimes in the middle overs, you'd think you'd toss the ball to someone who'd maybe turn it over. But actually, now you look at it and it's all action and it is all power from top to bottom. What's your take, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't see anyone competing with this team. The only thing that you have trouble with is probably coming into the semi-final. You get a West Indies on their day. You get a complete and utter, an overcast day. You look now, I'm just watching the start of this game where the West Indies have obviously won the toss. They're bowling first against Pakistan and there is a bit of swing. There is a bit of dew. And, you know, that for me is the only sort of difficulty that England are going to come up again. Suddenly they get in. You know, you get the Pakistan bowling attack, you know, sort of with a bit of dew. You know, Jason Roy gets out. Bairstow gets out. You know, suddenly you lose the likes of Root. And woof, you know, suddenly England are under real pressure. And you're thinking, this is the one-off game they've got to win.
Yeah, you spoke about it a little bit when you were last on Wednesday. And you said, look, OK, maybe they're going to be a bit susceptible to the odd injury, right? OK, but... actually, are we susceptible a little bit mentally because we're just used to steamrolling teams or certainly, you know, giving it a red hot crack? And what happens if we just suddenly find ourselves five down early doors?
Yeah, the problem with playing with one way is that you do get to a point where it's not always going to go right. England have lost the odd game, you know, every one in five or one in six games, you know, things do go awry, getting bowled out like they did by the West Indies over there. So it's not that it can't happen. I think it's just... you know, not getting fearful of that, you know, not thinking, oh, God, is that going to be the one game that we have? Is, you know, is it going to be in the semi-final when you don't want it to happen? And that would be the only worry is that, you know, favourites don't always win, but they should. And I think England in this instance are really the favourites.
Yeah, well, look, absolutely. And of course, it will be good for us because we've just played Pakistan in quite a lengthy ODI series and we've absolutely smashed them as well.
Love Sport.
Nick Compton here, Love Sport Radio, talking all things Cricket World Cup and what a day we had yesterday. Just looking at the old enemy, Australia, Justin Langer had a few words to say.
They're human beings, that's the truth, and that's what I find hardest. You feel for them personally, and they're going to have thick skin. We talk about earning respect. I think it's really important that people show some respect as well, because they are humans, they're really good cricketers. You know, they made a mistake, they paid the price for it.
Yeah, well, I suppose a lot of stick is going to be for the Aussie. I'm not even sure that Justin Langer's pleas for or sort of putting up the white flag is going to help them. I've got good man Chris Millard from the Barmy Army. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very well indeed. All the better for a great day yesterday.
Yeah, nursing a bit of a hangover potentially.
Yeah, I think everyone got a little bit carried away yesterday when they heard our rendition of Three Lions and a Crown over the Tannoy at the end of the game. So, it did get a little heavy and a little late into the night, but
brilliant,
ready for the rest of the tournament.
How excited are you and the guys, mate? I mean, it's so good to see you guys on the boundary. I know that the England team obviously appreciate all your support, but how good is it watching this one-day team?
Well, it's pretty special. It's just seeing the quality of everything they do, the way they apply themselves, even when
Johnny sadly failed at the top slightly, and then Joe came in and just applied himself so well in the middle order. A real intelligent innings from him, we thought. And seeing the quality of the field, and it's just breathtaking at times. Even the South African team, that the standard is just absolutely astonishing. But it's so amazing to see as an England fan, to see us really leading the way in every different part of the game, bowling, batting and fielding.
Absolutely. Now, look, obviously, Justin Langer has come out, and as Nick's rightly said, he's kind of tried to hoist the white flag a little bit, hasn't he? And just say, oh, please don't be mean to David Warner and Steve Smith. Chris, are you going to be keeping your mouth shut as the Barmy Army when those Aussies take to the crease, do you think?
Well, I think it's the old school ground tactics, isn't it? Try and wave the white flag before it even starts, so they ease off a little bit. But we're fully focused on supporting the England team for this World Cup. I think there's a fair few teams and a fair few games in it, and there's only one game against Australia. I think what we'll be doing is making sure the England team win this World Cup, supporting them through thick and thin, as we always do. And then we've got five games of the Ashes to get stuck into the Aussies. So we might just
tell me, I want to know the answer here. Have you got a song? You've got some songs prepared, surely.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We had a few people trying to sing them yesterday, but we're holding off. We want a big launch. We want a few songs that will get to them in our way that we always do, that will be funny but fair at the same time. But now you can be sure we'll
love
have it. I reckon it might even get into double figures.
Oh, I love it. Oh, I'm getting excited for this. I suppose the other thing is that in some ways I almost felt like a guy like David Warner, we all know that he enjoys a good fight and a good battle. You know, whether that might just play into his hands a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's the worrying thing. I think whenever we've really got stuck into Warner, when he came out to bat in 2015 after punching Joe Root, we sung the Rocky Balboa theme tune to him. and we really did get stuck into him. I think he went and scored 100 that day. So it can backfire. Yeah, we might just be silent when he comes out. Tell the whole ground to be silent, see what happens.
Or you could just kill it with kindness. Just give him like a guard of honour, like a confetti cannon, all this kind of stuff. Just try and be overly nice to him and just see if that throws him off. But I want to know, are you going to be wheeling out the trumpeter at any point during this tournament?
Yeah, absolutely. The trumpeter was there yesterday. He's going to be there at every game. We're even hoping that Billy will be able to play at Lord's for the first time ever due to the ICC wanting him to. So we're really hopeful that we're going to have a good reception at Lord's and a good reception throughout the whole tournament, really, because Bill's ready for it. He's got his shows in the West End called off throughout the tournament, so he's ready to play for the England team.
Can we get a little rendition, maybe? I mean, obviously, Jofra Archer's a bit of a talk of the town at the moment. I'm sure, I mean, everyone's excited about him. How does his song go there? Give us a little sentence. Come on.
So we've got a Jofra Archer song that was created yesterday, and it was created to the tune of the LA, LA, LA song, and that's gone down really well on social media. And it's all about him coming over here to play for us and how he...
Come on,
Chris. Let's have it.
I'll tell you the truth. I'm just clicking on it on my computer now. I don't know the full words. Okay. Jofra moved to England. The army were in luck. He got his residency. The selectors called him up. They gave him a few overs and said, we're signing off. He's going in the 15 to win us the World Cup.
Hey. Brilliant. I absolutely love it. I mean, I've got to take myself back to Eden Gardens, walking off, having hit the winning runs when we went 2-1, and you know, having the Barmy Army there singing my song when I walked off was still a moment I'll never forget, Chris.
Sure.
Truly
I
incredible.
Won't either. I was there. It was my favourite song in the Barmy Army with the least words in it. Sensational.
I wonder if there's anything behind that. Should we delve into that deeper? Probably not. But listen, mate. Just to say a huge thanks, and look, fans obviously know about you, but as a player, a former player, it's just great to have your support. I know how much the team appreciate it, mate, and great work.
Brilliant. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Nick, what's it like, right? Because I've obviously never had a song named after me, and I imagine if someone did come up with it, it wouldn't be particularly polite. So what's it like when you're just there and you realise they're actually singing about me?
Well, it was a bit of a pinch yourself sort of moment. You know, I was walking off, Ian Bell and I sort of hit those winning runs, and you're walking off Eden Gardens and you think, you know, this is a test match ground I've watched since I was a little kid, you know, with Indians sort of hanging off the rafters, you know, hundreds of thousands, you know, supporting their country. And, you know, to beat India and go 2-1 up in a country where not many people win test matches, you know, and to have them singing your song. I mean, it was a pretty special moment. I think it makes you feel a little bit nostalgic in the sense that those are moments that, you know, of course, you'll never forget.
Absolutely. Just a quick update from the live game at the minute. West Indies, Pakistan. West Indies have broken the deadlock.
Strangled down the leg side. I think Imam just, in all honesty, just got caught a little bit. I think he was sort of 2 off about 12 balls. Yeah. Not that that is an issue, but tried to sort of pull one down the leg side, got a little glove. Not a great way to get out, and he'll be frustrated because he is a dangerous player, but that was a pretty soft wicket.
Yeah, I mean, that must always be frustrating. You put all that amount of work and you get yourself so pumped up and then you just kind of glove one down the leg side, Nick. It can't be ideal at all, but obviously that catch was taken behind the sticks there by Shai Hope. We have got a famous England wicketkeeper coming up very shortly. Just before we get him on the line, Nick, Matt Prior. What was he like to play with?
Oh, look, I enjoy playing with Matt. I've known Matt a long time. He does have a few South African roots too, a bit like me. Not that that makes a difference, but Matt's the sort of guy that wears his heart on his sleeve. He was very instrumental in England's performances, particularly when he played, you know, that sort of Andy Flower-Strauss combination. A very big match player, somebody who liked the occasion, really sort of tried to galvanize the team in the field, you know, as wicketkeepers do. You know, sometimes it was hard work, I have to be honest with you. He was on my case a lot. So I can hopefully get my own back on him on this call a little bit, just to remind him that, you know, there was some hard days out there, you know, test match cricket, 5 days long, you know, running around the field and getting us going. But no, what a cricketer, what a player. Really enjoyed playing with him, and someone that I played against a lot too.
So what, would he have a bit of a pop at you when you were at backward point?
No, just keep you on your toes. Like, come on, compo, keep running through, you know, let's not slacken off. And you're sort of like, mate, it's 4 hours in and the team are 200 for two and I'm trying to stop Jimmy Anderson singles and, you know, I'm not Usain Bolt. I'm trying my best here. But I suppose it'll be interesting to talk to him. You know, in terms of the wicketkeepers, you know, in terms of Butler, just the technique behind wicketkeeping. I mean, you know, he's obviously kept in one day cricket. He's kept in test cricket. It's a real mental battle for these wicketkeepers.
Yeah, look, absolutely. And that's what I found a little bit perplexing about Joss Butler yesterday, because look, he did drop that catch and okay, fine. It didn't end up coming to anything and he stood up to the stumps. It's always tricky. It either sticks or it doesn't, realistically. But then the next ball after that, 4 byes between the legs, he's not staying low. That to me looked at a bloke who's maybe, he's let the not let the occasion get to him, but his head has slightly been shaken by that drop catch. And I thought that was quite uncharacteristic for Joss.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, God, the guy's not a robot. I mean, you know, I mean, we expect him to go out there and score 100 or 50 balls every time. We expect him to, you know, be the vice captain, to lead the team. I mean, there's a lot of work. I mean, let me tell you, those wicketkeepers, you know, have to be really, really fit. They have to focus. They have to have good concentration and stamina. Look, you know, you look at a guy like Shai Hope, you know, who we spoke about earlier on the show. You know, for me, he is one of the finds and will be one of the finds of this World Cup. He's wicketkeeping, you know. So you look at the pressure on a guy like that, you know, is that going to have an effect on his batting?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to know from your perspective though, Nick, when you were batting, right, and a keeper stands up to the stumps against a quick, you know, does that actually have a bearing on you? Do you listen to them when they get into your ear? Did you ever let it affect you? Or what was your kind of tactic on it, really?
I mean, they get into your ear, but they can't get into your ear while the bowler's bowling. So, yeah. You know, you might get a bit of banter here and there, but, you know, any sort of chat that they're doing or what have you is taking their own focus off the game. You know, I mean, one day cricket, it's hard to get too much, you know, say sledging or any words in, because there's so much going on. You know, fielders are running, everyone's trying to get round quickly. I can see my good friend Stephen Sylvester, who's the sports psychologist with the West Indies team. He's done a lot of work. I'll be catching up with him next week, which will be great. But just, you know, some of the work that goes on behind the scenes, you look at all the players that aren't playing. I mean, there's a lot of work that goes on. And I think that's something to possibly bring in. It's just, you know, sort of the backroom staff. You know, Patrick, you know, as an outsider, you probably see so many people, you know, sort of around the sort of periphery of it.
Yeah, well, look, absolutely. And it's like in football, isn't it? The kit man. And they talk about the importance of the kit man. But I tell you what, somebody who's much more important than the kit man.
We've got Matt Prior, former teammate. Cheese, great to have you on the line, mate.
G'day, Compo. How are you, buddy?
I know you're very busy. A quick one. We're talking about wicketkeeping, Matt. Just, you know, Joss Butler, obviously, as good as he is, you know, it just how tough is it, you know, doing everything that he is doing at the moment?
Oh, look, I mean, it is, of course. I think
the amount that's been spoken about him, and particularly Joss as well as a character. I think he's the kind of guy that just wants to go about his business and almost not be recognised for it. Unfortunately for him, he's that good that you can't hit 100 or 50 balls and not really get recognised. So he's been built up massively. I actually watched yesterday and saw the sort of drop catch, and then ironically the next ball, two balls later, threw the legs for four byes. And as a wicketkeeper, you just want the ground to swallow you up. Honestly, you just stood there and you're just thinking, oh my goodness, I do not want to be here. They're playing, you know, high motion, slow motion, super slow motion at every angle. And you're just feeling awful. But look, he's mentally a very, very strong character. It's one game. And he will come through, absolutely. Oh, and he's going to play. He'll play that innings. He'll win games for England. And his keeping's been outstanding.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, not trying to put you on the spot here. You're obviously a technician. You were incredibly fit yourself. You know, you're a vice captain of the England team, as Butler is. And it's obviously a huge load on you. Do you think there's a case where, I mean, in terms of the Bairstow versus Butler, you know, do you have an opinion on that?
I think, you know, right now they've probably got it about right. You know, Bairstow's keeping in the test matches.
Yeah.
And he's done a good job. Obviously there was a sort of Ben Folkes came in and played a few games, took the gloves off him. But I think towards the end of that West Indies series they got the balance of the team right now. Whether it's Bairstow, Butler, Folkes keeping wicket, that's a whole other argument. But okay. You know, your wicket keeper bats at seven, hopefully scores hundreds and keeps wicket well. The one day team, they're on fire. I mean, the cricket they're playing at the moment is unbelievable. I personally don't think they, you know, I think they were out of almost a 6 out of 10 from an ability perspective.
I agree.
But, you know, what England, that England team, how good they are. I mean, they batted well and they got, you know, over 300. You imagine if Butler comes off and a few others come off.
Do you think 500 is possible?
Oh mate, absolutely. Well, you play at a ground like Trent Bridge. You know how the ball can travel around there. If England have one of those days where they sort of as a unit they all come off. Well, who knows what they could score? Someone asked me yesterday, "What's a par score?" I honestly don't know. When England are batting one day cricket now on a good surface, who knows what a par score is? You sort of they get through, you know, 311, and you think, well, is that enough? And you kind of thing, you know, a few years ago, 311, you'd be whooping and hollering, yeah, celebrating already. Game over.
And they've almost had an under par sort of game. I mean, look, I think just looking forward, I mean, we've spoken so much about this England team. I know, obviously, Joffa Archer is down at Sussex, your beloved county. Mm. How good's this guy?
Well, I remember standing behind Hashim Amla for many an hour as he piled the runs on, and the short ball was just not an option. I mean, even on the quickest wickets, if you went short at him, he just looked like he had so much time. Whether he was actually taking it on or just ducking and swaying, he had so much time. I mean, I would say probably in the top three I ever kept wicket against for time on a short delivery. And I mean, Joffa hit him before it even moved yesterday. And I think that just, on a wicket that wasn't, I think Jonathan Trott made the point last night, on a wicket that actually wasn't that fast. So it shows the raw pace that Archer has. But I think also his delivery is very difficult because his wrist is so good that you struggle to pick up length. I've not faced him before, but I think it's similar to people used to talk about Sean Pollock having a very similar action in that you just couldn't see his short ball until it was too late. And that, Compo, as you know, from a top order batsman perspective, you need to feel comfortable on the short ball. You need to know that you've got that covered.
Absolutely.
That then allows you to move forward, get into the ball, etc., etc. So if you've got that element of doubt in your mind that Joffa gives, you know, well, the best in the world now. He's
just to
prolific.
No, well, just having a quick watch of obviously West Indies are playing Pakistan. Just looking at, you know, I presume you think that sort of India and Australia are going to be up there. Who's your other sort of left field choice?
Well, I mean, look, New Zealand are always a good team, a very good one day team. The West Indies, Pakistan. You never know which Pakistan team's going to turn up. They can be terrible, but they can be the best in the world comfortably.
Yeah.
I think for me, if I had to put it, the West Indies, again, having seen them, how they played in the winter, I think Jason Holder's a very good captain. I think he's sort of really sort of got the troops around and built a bit of a team ethic and team ethos.
All right, Matt.
And they've got the players that if they come off, they could be they could really challenge.
So the West Indies. Thanks, mate. Great to chat. Look forward to catching up. Big thanks to Patrick Christie. This has been the Cricket World Cup show on Love Sport Radio. Look forward to seeing you on Monday for England versus Pakistan.